Good evening. I'm curious tonight because I failed to mention last night as we ended the session and as we ended the session in your study guides, your very next page was an article, The Viable Missionary, by Don Larson. And I wanted to tell you to read that between last night and tonight. And I failed to tell you that. And I'm just really curious. Did any of you read that article? Raise your hand if you did. Okay, a few. Very good. Thank you. Any comments? Those of you that read it, any comments on that article? I know that kind of puts you on the spot, but the ushers are quickly grabbing mics, so you won't have to yell. If you have a comment on that article, feel free to raise your hand, and the ushers will give you a mic, and you can listen. Or you can talk.
It's a long process.
A long process. It is. It takes time, T-I-M-E, to really develop a relationship. Other comments?
What caught my attention was on the learner, more specifically as a learner, my major emphasis on language, the primary symbol of identification in my host community. When I try to learn it, they know that I mean business. I think that's important.
That's so true.
Not just in language, but they got to know we're serious about learning to know who they are.
Yeah. Not just language. They're already impressed. Typically other cultures, and then we're talking more about when you're going into a cross the waves type of culture that speaks a different language. The writer is addressing more of that. And you're right, Ryan. They are already impressed. Ryan said that you know, by learning, by taking an interest in them, they know you mean business. They also, you're sending a message that you care enough. And to learn more than just the language, like Ryan said, you're going to be asking questions about them. And that communicates that you're interested in them. Any other thoughts? It's my bad because I didn't tell you to read that last night. That's what I get. I feel like a juggler up here because I'm watching my notes and I'm trying to watch the study guide to make sure I'm fine. Of course, trying to make sure we've got the right PowerPoints up here. And I'm getting old to be a juggler. But anyway, so I spaced that out last night and I'm sorry about that. Any other comments on it? The missionary, a learner, a trader, and a storyteller. We're going to be going back to that in a couple more lessons. Another question, and I don't mean to put anybody on the spot. I just want to know how much I should say in review. Who's here for the first time tonight? Raise your hands again. Okay. Well, we welcome you. We're glad you're here. And just in review, I know that the subject, cross-cultural communication, cross-cultural understanding, sounds like a very boring subject to some, because it just does. But we're trying to answer the question that has been asked by so many different people in so many different churches, and that question is why aren't there more people from the communities, from our different communities, in our different churches, really across America, our Anabaptist churches, why are there so few first-generation Mennonites, first-generation Anabaptists in our congregations? Why are there so few? And I know that we've made comments, I've heard comments that, well, you can't really expect people to make such a change. And I totally disagree with that. And I said the first night, and I've said it before, and that is that if that's the case, then I'm out of here. Because I believe that the gospel of Jesus Christ should be applicable in any and every generation. And I don't make any excuses for our biblical application of kingdom principles. I don't make any excuses. I'm not ashamed of it. I think people will. I think we could be more effective. And that's the purpose of the study, is what can we do? And so we have to identify maybe some things that we have been doing wrong. And we'll really hit that subject tomorrow night. Looking at our Mennonite culture and the call of Christ. But that's why we're studying this here. We're studying it. We decided that with our work in Elkhart, and that is why we're starting late tonight. Is so if you see people straggling in, and they're in jeans and they look like they're in work clothes, it's because they've been working ever since probably they left their jobs around 4:30 and headed up to Elkhart, and they've been working with anywhere from 70 to 90 children and teenagers cross-culturally. And so we started a little bit late so that they could rush back from Elkhart and come in here and sit down. And Lord bless you, as I've seen some of you straggling in, so Lord bless you as you try to, I don't know how you're going to do it, calm your minds after working with all of that energy. But anyway, cross-cultural, how can we do it better? Tonight is maybe not quite as intense as last night, as we talked about the new birth and the dimensions of culture. Tonight we want to talk about cross-cultural differences, and some of it's a bit humorous. Again, laying the foundation of the task that is before us to communicate the gospel of Jesus Christ from my cultural perspective, because I have a cultural perspective on it, and communicating it to someone who doesn't think like I do, their logic is different. We looked at those dimensions of culture. Their affections are different. Their values, their loyalties are even different. And how am I going to communicate the gospel in a way they can understand, that they can say, yes, that makes sense to me? Jesus did an amazing job of it as he left the kingdom culture of heaven and entered the Jewish subculture and presented kingdom truth, presented the gospel in a way that they could understand. I meet with Shaheen, our brother, and saw him walk in here. There he's hiding, yes. Good evening, brother. And I meet with him once a week, and we have a wonderful time together. We sit there and laugh about as much as we talk. But if you get a chance, get to know him. Shaheen is an Iranian. I don't know if I'm how to say that correctly, but Iranian, I think. And we talk about his understandings of the Bible. Shaheen is a brand new Christian, and so we're meeting with him, and his questions are just refreshing to me. I get blessed more than he gets blessed as we discussed the Bible. And today we talked about, and I thought, wow, that fits in exactly what we're talking about what Jesus did. He had a question where Jesus was teaching right after he did the miracle of feeding the 5,000. And then they followed him across to the other side of the sea. And Jesus said, you guys are seeking me not because you want truth, but you're seeking me for the bread. And then he said, I am the bread that comes down from heaven. And Shaheen wondered, what does that mean? And you know, isn't that a beautiful picture of Christ speaking in language that they presenting the gospel in a form, it's what we talked about last night, in a form that they could understand. They knew what it was to feed on bread and live. They were really hungry just a day or two before when Jesus did the miracle. And he said, you eat of this bread and you'll never hunger and you'll never thirst again. You eat of this bread and you'll have eternal life. Jesus teaching using forms that they could understand. Are you willing to take the time to learn the people you're trying to witness to? Instead of you being the teacher right away, learn the people that you're witnessing to. We take so much for granted. And Shaheen, it's a dangerous thing to meet with a preacher when he's preaching meetings, because he'll use so many things about you for an example. And we talked this morning about the resurrection of Jesus Christ, and I was moved again, because friends, we take so much for granted. Believe it or not, Shaheen, you've lived in the United States. You've lived in Bremen for how many years now?
28 years.
28 years. He's lived among the Amish and the Mennonites. And it wasn't until this morning as we were talking that he realized that Jesus Christ rose from the dead. Where are we at? That's one of the basic tenets of our faith. And we assume everybody knows that. Don't you think we should be talking more about our faith to the people around us? Amen? I think we should be. Jesus Christ, Muhammad, he's still in the grave. Buddha's still in the grave. Jesus Christ rose from the dead victorious. Let's not take things for granted, folks. If you don't take the time to learn people, you're not going to speak to the areas that they need to hear. We got to take time. How many of you would like to? And I'm not asking for a raise of hands. How many of you are serious? That's what Naomi said about the reading. It takes time. How many of you are willing? Are you really willing? Would you really like to bear fruit and to have that fruit not just remain but grow so that that fruit can become fruitful and impact others? How many of you would like, care enough about that to invest the time that it takes to learn the people that God has put in front of you? Or are we too busy? It's not assumed that people know. Can we read the verse again that's up on the wall? John 15, verse 16. Let's read it together. Are you ready? Ye have not chosen me.
I have chosen you.
Now in the, and that your fruit should remain, I can't really read that without once again underlining that verbally, underlining that out loud, that your fruit should remain. That's the heart of Jesus. Not that we just bear a bunch of fruit, but that our fruit remains. In our mission efforts in Belize, El Salvador, Haiti, across the waves down to Thailand and India, Nepal, Myanmar, that we might bear fruit and that that fruit would remain. Ghana. Victor's here tonight, preparing again to go to Ghana, and that his fruit might remain. That's not just that he be fruitful, but that his fruit remain. And right here in Napanee, Indiana, in Bremen and Bourbon and Elkhart, that you would be fruitful, bearing fruit, and that your fruit would remain. Who will be in heaven because you took the time to effectively share the gospel with them? Who will be in heaven? We have the, when I teach this in a classroom setting, we have the textbook. I mentioned it the first night. It's called Anthropological Insights for Missionaries by Paul Hebert. We're going to read from that book. The next few slides are from that book. Tonight we're going to talk about cross-cultural differences. This page 47 out of that book asks some really good questions. Think about these questions. The fact that moral systems differ. Now, if you were here last night, you know what that's talking about. Different cultures have different morals. And ours isn't the right one. The kingdom, the superculture of the kingdom, is the right one. We need to press in towards that. The fact that moral systems differ from culture to culture raises many difficult questions in missions. How do we deal with the existing ethical beliefs of the people? How do we deal with that? And how do we introduce biblical concepts of sin? And then he asks the question, what in fact, somebody won't get that. What in fact is the biblical view of sin? What in fact is the biblical view of sin? Not your view of sin. What is the biblical view of sin? And to what extent are we in danger of forcing our own cultural values on others? Moreover, what happens when we do not live up to the norms of the people? Now, we're going to talk about cross-cultural differences. They have norms that aren't norms in my life and in my culture. And if I don't live up to their norms, I think it was Don Richardson, missionary to New Guinea, I think it was him. I might be getting a couple missionary stories mixed up, but they would have supplies come in from their mission board, mission station. They were an outreach post inland in New Guinea. And supplies would come, and food would come, canned food would come. And on that can, the natives noticed that on that can, if it was green beans, there was a picture of green beans on the can. And if it was corn, there was a picture of corn on the can. If it was tomatoes, there was a picture of tomatoes on the can. Well, the Richardsons had a baby on the mission field. And so the next supply that came in had some jars with pictures of babies on the jar. And immediately the Richardsons noticed that the natives stayed back, kept their children back. Because And he asked, what's the matter? Why are you staying away from us? And they said, Tulan, which meant teacher, you. And they told him what I just told you. And now you have cans with babies on them. You are eating babies. Cross-cultural differences. What happens? Moral systems differ. They don't know your morals, and we don't know theirs. He goes on page 62, and he says, less obvious yet more profound are differences in the ways people relate to one another and how they think about their world. All people see the same world, but they perceive it. We talked about this last night, through different cultural glasses. And they are often unaware of their culture and how it colors what they see. And can you imagine the illustration he has here? They're looking at the same world connected, but can you really believe that two different cultures could see the world so differently? But that illustration is trying to impress us that that's just how differently they see it. And that is true, folks, not just in between us and Papua New Guinea. That's true between us and Elkhart. Between us and the entitlement mentality, culture, subculture that is existing, the hip-hop subculture. If you want to reach to the teenage kids, they see the world drastically different than we do. And could we dare take the time? We almost come at this whole thing of sharing the gospel, we almost come at it that, well, you have to see the world the way I see it. I see it as an interconnected triangle. You have to see it that way. We're not going to win them. Your fruit's not going to remain. Can you take the time to see the world as a ball that's interconnected through their eyes? Learn them. Now you can communicate the gospel in a way they can understand. It takes time. He goes on, page 94. Inside and outside views. In learning another culture and sharing our own. Two different cultures. We're learning the other. We're sharing our own. We soon become aware that there is more than one way to look at a culture. First, we all learn to see our own culture from the inside. We are raised within it and assume it is the only and right way to view reality. We all feel that way. This is what we have to get over. Anthropologists refer to this insider's perspective as an emic view of a culture. It's the way I view my culture. It's the way I know my culture. You know your culture. You see it from, quote, the inside. That's an emic view. Now listen, when we are developing a relationship with someone to share the gospel with them, I'm the leader in that relationship. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm the leader in that relationship. I am the one who is being the aggressor. I'm the one who wants them to know about Jesus. Therefore, it falls upon my shoulders to be the one who learns about them. Because I'm the instigator. I'm the one who's leading out in this relationship. So how do I do that? Well, we have the inside view. That's the way I view my culture. The word is emic. And then when we encounter another culture, however, we soon realize that we're looking at it as outsiders. That's the only way we can look at it, right? When we first come to a new culture. We examine its cultural knowledge by using the categories of our own. We're going to do that in a minute as we look at cross-cultural differences. The only way we can examine it is with my knowledge, my cultural knowledge. It's the only way I can examine it. Later, we discover that the people of the other culture are looking at our ways through their own cultural assumptions. It's the way it is. Does this mean we are condemned forever to look at other cultures only from the perspective of our own? If so, is cross-cultural understanding ever possible? And he goes on to explain that it is. And we pick it up in page 96. And he calls it broader vision. Broader vision. This is what you and I have to press into. All right? We have to increase our vision. We can't sit back and expect them to increase theirs if we're going to reach them with the gospel. Broader vision enables them to detach themselves. This is talking about you and me. Okay, we are the them. Broader vision enables us to detach ourselves in some measure from our first culture. We have to detach ourselves and translate beliefs and practices from one culture to another. They have, we have, it's talking about us, in fact, become culture brokers, traders who move between cultures and bring ideas and products from one to the other. Such an outsider's perspective, not tied to any one culture, is an Eddic view of culture. That's what we have to aim for. That's putting it in a lot of anthropological jargon that we could soon fall asleep on. I understand that. But I wanted you to read it so that you can kind of get a feel where we want to go. Your goal is to learn. And that's probably one of the biggest places, one of the bigger places where we've been weak, is we haven't seen the need to learn. We look down on other cultures and we say, you need to learn our way because our way is the right way. And our fruit's not going to remain. Not going to happen. Let's look again at our definition of culture. And I want to, the last time we looked at this, we highlighted ideas, feelings, and values. Tonight I want to highlight the integrated system. Now we'll read the definition. Can we read it together just to keep you awake? Are you ready? The integrated system of ideas, feelings, and values, and their associated patterns of behavior and products shared by a group of people who organize and regulate what they think, feel, and do. The integrated system. Yesterday, we used the word implicit. It means it's there, it's not visible. Explicit is visible. Implicit is not visible. It's not seen. Your culture, all right, your subculture is an integrated system of ideas. We really broke that down yesterday, the three dimensions of culture. But it's an integrated system. It's built in. It's part of you. You think what you think without thinking it. You use the logic you use because of the cultural sharings that have come to you from as you grew up. You are who you are. It's integrated in you. Just as much. That's culture. That is what culture is. So cross-cultural, you know, that word wasn't even used. It came into being about 1942. And it means dealing with two different definitions, the American Heritage Dictionary, Merriam-Webster, dealing with two or more different cultures. Look at Merriam-Webster. There's no other way you can define it. Dealing with two or more different cultures or cultural areas. Cross-cultural. Dealing with two or more different cultures. Catch that word, different. They are different. We are different. Other cultures are different. And you've got two different cultures trying to communicate some pretty deep concepts when we want to talk about sin and salvation and justification. And you want to communicate it effectively in a way that they can understand. Two different cultures, cross-cultural. So now then, let's move into another definition. What then is cross-cultural comparison? Well, that's Don't let all this definition jargon get you either. Comparison of various psychological, sociological, or cultural factors in order to assess the similarities or diversities occurring in two or more different cultures or societies. And then Merriam-Webster says, offering comparison between two or more different cultures. There's that word again, or cultural areas, both of those. It's looking for similarities and diversities. So, and the only way we can do that is, as we said, with my emic view, I'm going to compare it with my knowledge. There's no, I have no other knowledge to compare it with. So, how many of you have been to Mexico? Anyone? Raise your hands high. Tell me just a few things about that you observed about Mexican culture. You finish it. Just tell me. What comes to your mind? They speak Spanish. Very good. They're lazy. Mm-hmm. That's a very subcultural view of their culture. Very good. Did someone else say something? They take siestas. That's part of their culture. They have their own kind of music, yes. The music they like is different than the music I like. They like hot peppers. Their food, they like some food that maybe some of us like too. But it's different food. It's spicy food. They're friendly. They are outside. Okay. They don't hang out inside more. Yes. You're right. Very good. They're not in a hurry. Larry would say that's because they're lazy. Very good. Now, did you see what we did? The only way you can do cross-cultural comparisons is by using my culture, right? It's what makes them different. But they'll look at us, and I could be in Mexico, and I could ask them, how many of you have been to the United States, and how many of you have been to the Mennonites of the United States, and tell me some cultural things that you observed about the Mennonites. Wouldn't you be curious what they would say about you? As they think about it in their terms, because we're different. Cross-cultural comparisons. You're looking for similarities, and you're looking for diversities. Typically, when we do cross-cultural comparison, we point out the diversities. Okay, we're going to look at some six major areas, and again, this is only session 3, and I told you, now starting tomorrow night, we're going to have to kind of pick up the pace to get 10 sessions in 7 evenings, but I told you Monday that, and I probably shouldn't have, I told you Monday that the first 4 sessions are laying the foundation, because we as Mennonites need to be convinced that this study is necessary. And so I spent about 4 sessions trying to convince you that this study is necessary. And so that is why tonight we want to look at cross-cultural differences to help you see really the barriers that are there if we want to seriously share the gospel in an effective way. Does that make sense? We have to understand the barriers if we want to become more effective. I told that, said that Monday night, that we're laying the foundation. And one brother, as he left, he said, well, we'll see you Thursday. He said he already knows that we need to study the subject, so he's just going to skip the next few evenings as I lay the foundation. But he's been here, so he was just joking. But that's why I said I shouldn't say that, because you do want to come. All right, as we get into this, Again, I want to juggle all three of these notes and make sure I'm where I want to, where I think I am. Okay, I would. I'm going to give one. I'm going to ask for some volunteers. I want three volunteers to come forward. Three young guys, whatever. Just come. Don't be afraid. Three volunteers. Is this mic on, Reuben? I'd like three volunteers to come forward. Very good. Good evening, Victor. Thank you for coming forward. Go ahead and have a seat. You can sit up there. Good evening. How are you?
Good to see you.
Good. Good evening. It's good to have you here. Okay, go ahead and have a seat. I'll be using you in a minute, okay? Go ahead. I want to say one thing about... I want to say, I want to say something about cross-cultural differences. Time is one big thing, and you guys can feel free to sit. Go ahead. Time is. I know that in Belize they talk about Belizean time. When we were living among the Sioux Indians, they talked about Indian time, and that's really hard for us to get a hold of sometimes, because our subculture values efficiency, right? That's one of our values, and so let's make good use of our time. I'll never forget when we lived in Cherry Creek among the Sioux Indians, I had a friend. He was an older Indian. His name was John Paul Buck Elk Thunder. Yeah, their names are different too. You'll find out that across the cultures, even in Elkhart, right? Those of you that work in Elkhart, the names are different. And his name was John Paul Buck Elk Thunder. And he became a good friend of mine. His wife died. And there was a Catholic church there on the res there that was hardly ever used, but she considered herself a Catholic, and so the priest came down to have a funeral. And so John Paul was older, and so I decided I would go pick him up and bring him to the funeral. And so he would always tell me when I came over to visit him in his house, the Indian word for hello is hola. And he said, just open the door and say hola and come in. Don't wait for me to come to the door. And so that's usually what I did. And I did, and then hola, and I came in. And it was about, 15 minutes before the funeral starts. Funeral's supposed to start at 11 o'clock, and so I got there about 10:45. And hola, and I come in, and John Paul, yes, yes. And he comes from his bedroom. In just a pair of pants, no shirt, obviously pretty much just got out of bed not too long ago. And so I told him, I said, I thought I would come and take you to the funeral. Oh, okay, you don't have to do that. And I said, yeah, I thought I would. Oh, okay. And so he proceeded to go into the kitchen and open up the fridge and open up a cabinet and got a skillet out and pulled a steak, put about that much lard in the skillet, because these people, you know, different cultures like different food. And he took a steak, a nice, beautiful steak, ready for the green egg. And he took that steak and he put it in that half inch of grease. And he started to fry a steak. Frying, smoky, stinky. And I'm watching the clock. And I asked him, I said, John Paul, what time does the funeral start? Oh, 10 minutes. And, you know, Nettie and the children, they already had gone to the church. And finally, it was about 5 till 11, and John Paul was making some cross-cultural comparison of his own. And he said, why don't you just go ahead and go? I guess I was getting fidgety. And so I said, oh, okay, because I didn't know. I didn't know nearly. I hadn't studied about these things like I have since, but I didn't know a lot of things. And so I did. I left him and went to the church house, and I sat there with my family. And we sat there and sat there and sat there. And I think it was about 11:30 or maybe even a little bit after when John Paul walked in. And it was shortly after that that the funeral started. So, you know, Indian time. He saw that I cared more about the clock than about him. You see, we're going to talk later about messages, the things we speak, and the para-messages that we send, the body language. And a lot of times our body language doesn't match up with what we speak. And they sense that. We have to learn them. We have to learn their culture. We are the aggressors in the relationship. Did you guys think I forgot about you? A little. Are you worried about the time? Okay. Good. Because I have more stories. You know, when I taught this at Faith Builders the last time, I get on rabbit trails, I'll readily confess. And most of you know Brandon Mullett, and he's a good friend of mine, and we meet and we talk. We go out for breakfast when I'm there, if you can imagine me going out for breakfast and meeting somebody. And I told Brandon, he asked me, how's classes going? I said, well, it's going good, but you know, I just get on so many rabbit trails. And Brandon said, yeah, he does too. You know what? He's finally decided. I said, what? He said, I just decided that I just hope they enjoy the rabbit trails as much as I do. And, you know, I thought, that's, you know, I do. I hope you enjoy them as much as I do. I'll try and stay on target, though. Well, whenever we have differences in culture, we're going to have cross. Can you guys see that okay? Where you at? Okay. We're going to have cross-cultural misunderstandings. Now listen, you're the missionary. You're the one that's going into Elkhart. You have got to learn so that you eliminate the misunderstandings. They're going to think things that you don't care when you do care. But you send messages without knowing it. The first barrier, and it's probably one of the biggest ones, to fully entering another culture is misunderstanding. This has to do with a cognitive block. Now, we talked about that dimension. That cognitive block is a lack of knowledge and understanding. You don't know this new culture. You don't understand this new culture, and that leads to confusion. And when you have misunderstanding and confusion, that often leads to a lack of trust. Probably one of the best examples of that is the American Indians. When we lived among the Sioux Indians, I did a lot of reading about the Sioux Indians. I wanted to understand them without knowing that I should. I just wanted to, and you know, our history is poorly written. Because we make the Indians, our history makes the Indians look like savages. And the white pioneers moving peacefully across the prairies. And it's not that way. And I could spend a lot of time going into that history, but I won't. But one thing I want to say is, as the white man would be moving closer to the Indian settlements, and they'd hear the drums, and the dancing, going late into the night, the white man would immediately fear. And they would say that the Indians are on the war path. That's what they would say. Listen. You hear the Indians on the war path. Listen to their drums. And they would fear and they would get ready for war. And what the Sioux Indians were doing, they were having what they would call ghost dances that went way into the night. And what they were trying to do was, because the white man was coming and taking their territory and taking their lands, they were seeking, because they were animistic in their religion, and they were seeking their ancestor chieftains. Because many animists will pray to its ancestral worship. And they were seeking, they were dancing deep into the night, calling upon their ancestors to come and rescue them from, protect them from the white man. They were not on the war path. They were trying to call upon their ancestors to protect them from this advancing, attacking white man. But the white man was fear, because they did not understand that culture. And as soon as they heard the drums, they feared because of cultural misunderstanding. They didn't know. They didn't understand. And the white man wanted gold. And that's why they would sign a treaty and they'd find out that there's gold on the other side of the Mississippi. And they'd break that treaty and kill Indians along the way to get that gold. And then they'd sign another treaty that the Black Hills would belong to the Sioux. And then they found there's gold in those hills. And they broke those treaties and killed the Indians. That's the way the history is. And yes, there were renegades who would decide that since the Indian groups themselves were not doing anything except calling upon their ancestors, there were renegades that broke out of the camp and would go and attack the white camp before they attacked the Indian camp. It did happen, but the white man was not innocent. Anyway, I bring that point in just because they were not on the war path. But there was total misunderstandings, total fear, because of a lack of trust. That's a huge example. But it happens now when you go into that other culture. When you go up to Elkhart, into that culture, do you trust them? No. Because one reason is you don't know them. You don't understand why they steal. You don't understand the way they think. Cultural misunderstanding and confusion will lead to a lack of trust. You guys doing all right? I'm about ready to use you. Six areas of cultural differences that we want to look at. Let's get my highlights. Misunderstanding, cognitive block, leads to confusion, and that will lead to a lack of trust. You're not going to trust somebody if you don't know them. Okay, we have to get to know them. I told you I'm going to hammer that point night after night. We got to be learners. We got to love enough to learn. Jesus did it for 30 years before he started ministering. Six major areas of cross-cultural differences. You guys aren't going to be able to take notes, but you'll catch up. The way we view time, the way we greet, the way we express friendship, the way people view the floor, the way we communicate, the relational distances we feel comfortable with. Those are six major areas. There's more, but these are the major ones that seem to differ across cultures. We want to look quickly at them. The way we view time. Look at the chart in your book. I have it up here for those that are up here with me and don't have their books. You doing okay, brother? Okay. We're going to get to you in a minute. I just wanted you to be up here for a little bit. Arab time versus American time. Now listen, remember what I told you. When you want to share the gospel, you are the instigator of the relationship. You are the one who is promoting the relationship because you want to share with them Jesus Christ, right? So you're going to meet with this Arab. You're going to meet with this Middle Eastern guy. And I've talked to Shaheen. He said, yep, that's the way it is. How many of you remember Pervez, my friend from Pakistan? He came to church. We had him talk. Remember Pervez? And I asked him, Pervaiz, is this really how it is? He said, yep. And so this is really how it is. Okay, Arab time, American time. So you've got an appointment. You're going to meet your friend at 12, okay, at noon. 5 minutes before noon, everybody's cool. There's nothing going on. The appointed time, the servants should be there. We think everyone should be there. That's what we think because we value that clock. 5 minutes later, nothing happening over here. If I'm 5 minutes late, I need to say, oh, sorry. Just mumble an apology. 5 minutes late because I'm 5 minutes late. Sorry, I got started late. Maybe I'll text, hey, I'm going to be 5 minutes late. Because that's our culture. That's what we value. 10 minutes late, nothing happening there. Somebody's going to be 10 minutes late. You better, there's more of a real apology, not just mumbled. In between 10, 15 minutes, if the servants aren't there yet, then they're late in Arab time. 15 minutes, we're still there with that slight apology. 20 minutes, full apologies required, 20 minutes late. You better have a good excuse. 30 minutes, 45 minutes, now it's getting a little rude. In fact, I just might leave. How many of you would stick around for 45 minutes waiting for somebody to show up? By that time, you're going to decide they forgot. This is really bad. 1 hour. In Arab time, that equals on time. Because at 12 o'clock is when they started getting ready to go. It's their culture. And it's true. And, I've been in India, and that's the same way. And I'll tell you what, it will test your faith. When you're waiting, when it's time to head back, you've had your week of preaching or teaching, and you're waiting on your Middle Eastern friend to pick you up for the airport. Because we value being on time, and that plane's not going to wait on me. And you get nervous. They've been late all week for the services. And now they're supposed to pick me up at 9 o'clock for the airport. It tests your faith. But usually they're for something like that, then they're typically going to make it on time. But 1 hour after, that equals on time. Very insulting for us. An hour and 15 minutes, now that guy's late, and it's unforgivable on us. Now, so picture that. He finally shows up 45 minutes to an hour late. And you are... He can tell you're upset. And you tell him, he says, well, what time did you come? Well, I came at noon. And you all of a sudden you see his mind turning. And he's thinking, why are you acting like a servant? I'm meeting with the servant? I thought I was meeting with you. Why are you acting like a servant? You see? If you don't understand all that, time. How about greetings? North American men shake hands firmly, not limp. And only for a few seconds. Now, you didn't know it, but when these guys came up, I shook their hand. And they didn't like my handshake. Now, when Victor came up, I thought, I wonder how it's going to work with Victor. He didn't like it. Did you, brother? I'm limp here, and I'm just kind of hanging on. Now, he's behaving now, but look at him. He's not enjoying this. Victor, you can go back to your family. Thank you. And that surprises me because African men typically shake hands, but with a limp handshake that may last several minutes. And I talked to a missionary friend to Kenya. I said, is that true? Oh, yes. He says, in fact, again, time. He says, when you go to the store in Kenya, like to the hardware store someplace, and it's a small store, and you go there, you don't go there and tell them what you want. You first go there and visit with them for a while. Victor's shaking his head, yeah. You go there and you visit with them for a while. And then after a while, you tell them what you want. You better not be in a hurry. You're the Christian. You're going to offend. Do you see? We have to learn how they think and why they do what they do. To us, a limp handshake suggests wimpiness or homosexuality. Right? Oh, a firm handshake from a good American, but he pulled away. I wasn't done. Okay, you can go back.
Thank
you. Mexican men, they prefer to embrace rather than shake hands. In Thailand, it's Proud here tonight. Hello, Proud. In Thailand, that's how you greet. And you have to know how to greet. Proud, if I'm embarrassing you, aren't I? If I were to greet you like this, would that be correct? No. Why not? It's right. I am older, and that's very important. I'm the teacher. I'm the adzan. And so for me to, even the position of where your hands are. And so if you say, if you're the Christian, and you're going to talk with young people, and you go, Sware ka, they're going to say, what are you doing? That's what we should be doing to you, because the higher it is, the more respect you're showing. You have to know those things. Are you going to send messages that they're going to say, you're weird, man? Ways of greeting. The Siriano men of South Africa, I'm sure you've already read that, spit on each other's chest. Picture that at the airport. Welcome! Some of these young boys over here would say, I want to go. Juggling, and I dropped my book. Ways of greeting. You get to the airport and you don't know that, and they spit on you. What are you going to think? Friendship. North Americans. It's not uncommon for a male and a female to walk hand in hand and put their arms around each other in public. In some cultures, that's wrong, especially in the Islamic cultures. You don't do that in public. For us, it's normal. South Asian men show their mutual friendship by walking down the street hand in hand. We see two Thai men, two Korean men, and they're walking down the street hand in hand. What are you going to think? How many of you remember Pastor Giet, my Thai pastor friend? And Desha, another good friend of mine. Desha probably did it before Giet did. We were walking someplace, and I felt his hand slip into mine. Now, if I want to be a witness to him, the worst thing I can do is what these two guys that I sent back did to me. They pulled away. The worst thing I could do is pull away. Because that's his way of showing friendship. But yeah, you know how I felt. And I finally did get to the place where, and Pastor Giet still does it to this day, but get to the place where I take that as a compliment. I really do. That they, from their cultural perspective, feel comfortable enough with me to show friendship the way that they would normally show friendship. And to take that as a compliment. Can you make those changes enough so that you don't build walls. We have to build a bridge. We're going to talk about building bridges another evening. But so often, unknowingly, we build walls. We want to share the gospel effectively, amen? We don't want to build walls. It's so easy to do. The floor. I intentionally invited three people up here, knowing that there's only two chairs. And you saw the struggle that they had. I told them, take a seat. North Americans see the floor as dirty. We walk on it with our shoes. Asians see the floor as being clean. North Americans, we walk on the floors with our shoes on. Asians remove their shoes at the door. North Americans have given, think about it. We have given so much attention to building platforms to keep us off the floor. Think about it. Tables, benches, beds, chairs, couches, recliners, rockers. At an airport or bus station, they will recline on a chair and suitcases. And in a packed auditorium, they will either stand or leave. Asians feel very comfortable sitting on the floor, eating on the floor, and even sleeping on the floor. And guess what? There's a whole lot more room when you learn to sit on the floor. When you have to have platforms, you have problems like what we had up here. I tried to get him to take a seat. I was impressed that he sat down on the floor instead of just standing up because there's no other chair. We have to have our platforms. You have got to learn. If you're going to be in a culture that considers their floor clean, you get your shoes off at the door. They'll watch you walk across the floor with your shoes on. You're dirtying their floor. They sit on it. They eat on it. I've preached sitting down. Short message. You know, the Asian people, they sit on the floor. They sit like Kyle is. You probably can't see him. Cross-legged, right? Most cultures, a lot of cultures do. We had some Koreans come to our church in Thailand. I tell you, there's so much to learn. They came to me because I was the pastor of the church. And they came to me and said, we want to have a Bible study. And they were already Christians, and they wanted to just study the Bible. And so I said, okay, yes, we can have Bible study. And I'm thinking, I'm the pastor. Why didn't I think of that, you know? And so we want to have Bible study. And I said, okay. I said, what evening do you want to have it? Let's Tuesday evening. You want to have it every week? Oh, yes, every week. Okay. And I said, how long? You want to have it like for an hour? Oh, no, at least 2 hours. Oh, okay. And sometimes enough of them would come that we would have to sit on the floor because we didn't have enough platforms. And so we'd sit on the floor. Or we'd go to their house sometimes and have Bible study and sit on the floor. Well, you know what? Those people can sit on the floor, cross-legged, and their knees go all the way down to the floor. You know, ours don't. You know, ours are still up about like this, you know? And I'll never forget our dear friends. Oh, and they'd run and they'd get pillows and stuff them up underneath my knees. I was comfortable. They was as far as they're going to go. Differences. Differences. The floor. The bottom of the foot in Thailand. And you know, there's some things that just seem right. In Thailand, you don't show the bottom of your foot to someone. Okay? In other words, us men, American men, will oftentimes sit with their leg. In fact, that's the manly way to cross your legs, right? There's in America, there's two ways you cross your leg. The women, they cross their legs like this, but the men, they cross their legs like this, right? And you know, that's our culture. Well, in Thailand, when you cross your leg like that, guess what? Your foot's aiming at somebody. And that is as bad as, that's bad. All right? We sometimes refer to a bird here in America, flipping something. And that is the same as that, believe it or not. It's that bad. And I've watched some of our people that come over there not knowing that. And, you know, picture someone just sitting across the room from you, flipping what we call the bird, and just sitting there and doing that. How are you going to feel about that? You see, and then you're going to teach them the gospel? And you just got finished giving them one of the most major insults that you could give them. You see the importance of learning? Learning these people that we're going to... I don't care if it's Elkhart. I don't care if it's Shamrock Meadows. Michael's... I don't care. Do you love them enough to take the time to learn so that you can effectively present the gospel? Communication. You doing okay, brother? Okay. Communication. Anglo-Germanic, Scandinavian cultures. Anglo would include us, okay? Are detail-oriented. We like things spelled out. We're detail-oriented. And I just got ahead of myself. They want things spelled out and explicit. Make it clear. Give me some clear instructions. We like that. Asian, Arab, French cultures, they're context-oriented. In other words, they don't need the details. Just, if less is spelled out, communication is more indirect with more being assumed. As a result, context-oriented people, and that's not us, we're the detail-oriented people, they often feel that Americans are, we're blunt. You know, we're going to give it line item by line item, right? Americans often feel context-oriented people are being secretive. They never tell me what they're doing. How can I trust them? They never tell me what they're doing. Context-oriented people often feel the detail, that'd be us, oriented people, we insult their intelligence because when we want to explain something to them, we explain it to them. And they're thinking, I'm not a kid. Detail-oriented people feel that context-oriented people, they provide no direction. How are they ever going to lead a church? And we have to understand these people are different. And I think in our mission efforts, when we are doing a mission effort for 30, 40, 50 years, and we have no indigenous pastor there yet, we're doing something wrong. And I think too often we're trying to we haven't taken the time to learn their culture, to learn who they are, and give them the gospel in a way they can understand it. We give them the Mennonite gospel. And it's foreign to them. And we're going to see in a couple evenings what happens when we give them a foreign gospel. Communication. We have to understand the people are different. Let's talk about the next one. Come here, Kyle. Let's talk about the next one. So far, how are you feeling?
Fine.
How'd you feel about the handshake?
A little awkward.
Mm-hmm. So, are you feeling okay now?
Yeah.
Okay. You seem like you're not really feeling.
Well, you're a little close.
I'm a little close. Does this bother you?
Not yet.
A little bit already.
A little bit.
I'd say. Because you're kind of wanting to move back. I, I saw you shuffling your feet even earlier when I was over here. You were kind of shuffling your feet. Do you feel okay? Thank you. You can go back. Do you remember the definition of culture that we looked at the beginning of tonight's lesson? The integrated system. Integrated. It's inside of us. I did not have these guys come up before this class, this session, and say, look, I'm going to call you up and this is what I want you to do. I knew that they would do it. I never really know to what extent. I use that example all the time. I call them up. I shake hands with them limply. They'll pull away. They don't like it. They get fidgety about the time that's being wasted while they're waiting on me talking because they're efficient with their time. And then the final one, when I get close, they don't like it because it's integrated in us. It is part of who we are. We call that our intimate zone. I just got into Kyle's intimate zone, and Kyle says, you don't belong there, buddy. But you know what? In Asia, when that man reaches out to take your hand, or Giet and I might be sitting in chairs and just visiting and talking, and his hand goes on my leg. He's in my intimate zone, folks. I can either offend him and build a wall. Now remember, you might be saying, why do I have to be the one? Because you're the one that's witnessing. Jesus Christ is the one who came from heaven and became like us. And you are like to be like Jesus. And yes, that's why you're the one who has to be careful about all the things you do. That's why you're the one who needs to learn. Because you want to effectively share the gospel with them. Yes? Our intimate zone. This is who we are. I did not tell Kyle. Kyle's still over there. Man, he's losing it. He's trying to recover from this guy that just invaded his intimate zone. Inside that zone, for us Americans, it's 0 to 1 foot. That's the physical contact, intimate conversation. Very, very, very few people are allowed in there. Then we have 1 to 3 feet. That's personal zone. Okay, close friends, subdued voices. Kyle, I got about 3 feet from him, and I stayed here. I said, Kyle, you can get up now. And he came, and I took a few steps from the pulpit to get him to come, and I stopped. You did this all on purpose, and he stopped about 3 feet from me. And I moved in a little closer, and I saw him shuffling his feet. Any one of you would have done that, all right? And you understand now why I asked for guys to come up, because personal zone, 1 to 3 feet, close friends, subdued voices. If you're a close friend of Kyle's, that's where he wants you. And he's not going to feel uncomfortable. I guess I know where I stand with Kyle. Then we have that green zone. That's our social zone, 3 to 12 feet. This is so interesting to observe, and I challenge you to observe it in the workplace tomorrow. Public topics, politics, the weather, local matters, world news, surface things, that's where that stuff takes place. So how's the weather? Oh, yeah, good. Yeah, did you hear about Trump last night? Yeah, yeah. And when somebody walks in a room, or you're having a conversation at work and somebody walks, if they walk very close to the blue zone, we feel like we got to acknowledge them. Hey. But if they're just on the outside or beyond that green zone, they can walk through. We don't feel like it's watch it happen. It happens all the time. It's integrated. It's who we are. And then outside that public zone, you can ignore them. You don't have to say hi. You don't have to even realize that they walk through the room. You just let them go. That's who we are. That's our zones. That's not that way for the Arab, for the Asian. I've already told you where they are. They're much closer. They're in your face. A lot of other cultures, we call them warm climate cultures. They're in your face a lot of times because they're much closer. So this is exactly what happened with me and Kyle. So there you are. You're very happy. You're even smiling. You're in your intimate zone. And so you're going to witness to this guy. You got him about 4 feet away, and he's an Asian. He's Middle Eastern. He's whoever. He's much used to closer zones than this. He likes the fact that you want to be his friend. So he starts to move closer to you. And you're saying, hold it, buddy. Now listen, you're the Christian. You're the one who needs to win this guy. You don't want to build walls. But what do? You pull a Kyle, you shuffle your feet, and as you move away, you take your zones with you. All right? You didn't leave your zone over there. Your zones are always with you because you're the center of your zones. And so there now Kyle's happy again. This guy's, he may not have noticed it the first time. You know, just some shuffling going on as you're talking, you know. But he's talking and he just kind of moves in closer again, you know. And there you are. Now you're feeling uncomfortable again. Now, listen, folks, if you move away again, he's going to notice it. See, this guy doesn't like me. You know, I know he's American. And as soon as they say, I know you're American, they're thinking, yeah, I know you're rich, I know you're this. But I thought you were interested in me. I thought you wanted to be my friend. Cross-cultural misunderstandings happen simply because we don't know. And so very important to know these things because we're the ones who want to impact them. Let's hope he comes back in and gives you another chance. And let him hold your hand. Consider it a privilege that he wants to be your friend. We need to start looking at things differently. This is a picture of an IGO student when he was on ministry trip. Some of you may know him, Arlen Beachy from Kokomo. He knows I use this picture. I asked him if I can use it. His first year of IGO students, and I was teaching this subject, and they always take pictures on their ministry trips. I believe this was in Bangladesh. And so I was going through the pictures. They send them out digitally, and I was looking at them, and I saw this one, and I stopped. He's in Bangladesh. He's got this friend that he's made. I want you to notice. Now, Arlen's the missionary, right? He's on ministry trip. He's an IGO student. He should know, right? Look, this is integrated. It is. He doesn't even know he's doing it. And I showed it to him, and he couldn't believe it. But look, who looks happier? Huh? And look at the position of their waistlines. The hands are closer where? This guy is almost straight arming. In fact, if you can see, and I don't know you can, his veins are sticking out. And it's not because he just got finished lifting weights. And you can tell he is not comfortable with this situation. Look at this guy. He is just happy. He's got a friend. And Arlen is here. It's integrated. And that could be a picture of any one of us. All right? So the people that you relate to at work tomorrow, the people at Elkhart, I don't know who you witness to. But are you learning them or are you building walls because you don't understand? You see the challenge. How can we affect? This is the question, folks. How can we effectively share the gospel with a person who doesn't think like I think? He doesn't reason like I reason. He doesn't apply his knowledge the same way I apply mine. He handles his feelings differently than I do. His likes, dislikes, lifestyle is so different than mine. The food he likes is different. In fact, some of the food he likes grosses me out. His values are so different than mine. His definition of right and wrong is different than mine. Even his moral code is different than mine. His allegiances are different than mine. How can I effectively share the gospel? I told you this, we're laying the foundation. This is the things we want to look at in the next few evenings. How can we effectively, we're going to learn some tools to overcome ethnocentrism. And you've already looked up that word. That means that every culture has it. And that is that my ethnic group is the best. My ethnic group is central. We're the smart ones. We're the ones that everybody should go by. Every culture has it. In one of my classes, I had the privilege of having a Lisu. Lisu is one of the tribal people in Thailand. Up in the hills, there's different tribes. Akka, Lisu, the Karen. And so I had Alisu. He's a Christian, and he could speak English well enough that he came to Igo, and his name was Aki. And we got to this part about ethnocentrism. I said, Aki, do you think that the Lisu people are much better than the Aka? Oh, yes. He didn't have to hesitate. I don't care how small the people group is. We all think that our people group is the best. We're going to learn tools because we communicate that everywhere we go. Westerners do. And as Christians, we have to overcome that because they're already looking at us that we think we're better. We have already got a hurdle because of our track record. We got to learn ethnographic skills. That is how to study a culture. That's a big word that just says how to study a culture. Ira came up to me after the first night and told me about some students that came to their house a long time ago and lived with them because they wanted to study the Mennonites. They were doing an ethnographical study. Tools. We'll just talk about that. We don't spend much time on that, but we're going to talk about that a little bit. We want to understand the culture into which Christ calls us. We've already been bringing that out. We're going to learn some tools there. We've got to quickly overcome culture shock because that will paralyze us, and we need to learn properly how to contextualize the gospel. Sometimes we don't even think that's necessary. We're going to learn about that. We're going to talk about that, and we're going to learn to build that cultural bridge. Those are the things we're going to look at in the next few evenings. So how can we effectively share the gospel when people are so different? Those are the things we want to talk about. That is the end of the session. So let's, any questions, comments? I want to thank those who came up to help just by being yourself. Please come back again tomorrow night. It starts at 7 again instead of 7:30. Let's stand for closing prayer, and then Kyle, maybe you could lead, or not Kyle, where's Kendall? You could lead a song. Let's pray. Father God, I want to thank you for everyone that's here tonight.